Hello and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday the 11th of February 2025. My name's Simon and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen by Mandy Wood and Malini Ladd, and read by Hazel Hobbs and Malini Ladd. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to OxTalk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access OxTalk online.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to OxTalk using Alexa. To listen to OxTalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to OxTalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.
The main agreement that regulates international wildlife trade is failing to deter the illegal trade of many species, according to researchers from Oxford University. Analysis found the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, CITES, is not adequately preventing the illegal extraction and trade of many species. This year marks half a century since CITES came into force, but the research team is calling for reform to ensure trade does not harm the status of wild populations of plants and animals. The researchers evaluated the effectiveness of CITES, asking whether the convention is solving the problem for which it was designed. Their analysis revealed critical flaws in the CITES approach, including a predominant focus on state-led law enforcement to prevent the illegal trade and extraction of species, and the exclusion of nuanced socio-economic analysis in decision-making. Evidence indicates that in recent years, illegal wildlife trade has involved thousands of CITES-listed species and occurred in at least 162 countries. Co-author Dr. Michael Tsars-Ralfs from the School of Geography and the Environment at the University of Oxford said, "The current approach is proving ineffective for many species due to under-resourced public agencies and a lack of motivation, as many consider the laws illegitimate. In some cases, simply prohibiting international trade appears to accelerate over-exploitation, the opposite of the intended effect." The researchers have developed a new decision support tool for CITES, based on an in-depth understanding of wildlife trade systems and the use of inclusive and consultative governance processes to revise or redesign the rules and regulations around the use and trade of species. Dr. Dan Challander, lead author of the study, said, "Current decision-making processes in CITES assume that a predominant focus on state-led law enforcement is the best solution, when in fact this approach is proving inadequate for many species across most parts of the world. The time has come for CITES to change. there should be much more focus on exploring institutionally diverse conservation models, so there's less reliance on under-resourced public agencies. Unlike the current approach, where many species and sites receive a one-size-fits-all approach to trade regulation, the proposed framework tailors interventions to specific trade systems, situates them within broader institutional settings, and aligns institutions along international supply chains. These interventions could include devolving land or use rights to species to indigenous peoples and local communities, management or ownership of species by private actors, programs, to reduce consumer demand, and the development of responsible markets for wildlife products in circumstances where this would be likely to benefit species. Morrison's has introduced Braille menus to all its cafes as a way to improve the experience for visually impaired customers. The move follows the supermarket listening to customers who require visual aids, who stated that visiting a cafe can be a daunting experience. The Guide Dogs organisation has welcomed Morrison's introduction of Braille menus as a positive step towards accessibility. A spokesperson said, "Enabling people with sight loss to have the best experience and the same access as everyone else is an important part of ensuring they can live independently, actively and well. Introducing Braille menus is a welcome step in ensuring Morrison's stores are more accessible, as well as working with us to make sure all guide dog owners are rightly welcomed in store. Each cafe will have a Braille menu available, which includes all the same details of meal options and deals written in the combination of raised dots." Sean Gill, director of cafe at Morrison, said, "It can be easy to take everyday tasks like ordering in a cafe for granted. We're always looking for ways to better support our customers, and the rollout of our Braille menus comes as a direct result of listening to those who visit our cafes and are visually impaired. The change will make a big difference for the people that need it the most, and we look forward to making our cafes a more inclusive experience for all our customers to enjoy tasty food at affordable prices." It marks the latest customer-facing initiative introduced by CEO Rami Bate, who pledged to refresh the supermarket after taking the helm in 2023. Other changes introduced so far include digital screens and an AI app, child-friendly checkouts, stop and rest areas, extended quiet hours, and allowing shoppers to join management meetings. It comes after the supermarket saw its full-year profit rise last month, as it reported its strongest quarter since 2021. The retailer reported a 4.1% rise in group like-for-like sales to $15.3 billion in the year to October 27th, as fourth quarter sales climbed 4.9% to $3.8 billion.
A grassroots football club manager is calling on the City Council to provide teams with new pitches if a recreation ground would be used to build 120 new homes. Barry Evans, who is involved with Blackbird Leys Football Club and East Oxford Football Club, made the comments about their home Sandy Lane Recreation Ground, which has been earmarked for 120 houses in Oxford City Council's local plan. "The space is home to a variety of local football teams, including Greater Leys Youth Football Club, Florence Park Football Club and Oxford Blackbird Leys." Mr. Evans said, "By all means, if they do go ahead, they must make other areas available for football. I've tried for many years now to improve the Blackbird Leys field with extra grass care and its own clubhouse. So not only have you got Oxford Blackbird Leys, East Oxford, Greater Leys, Leys United and many other clubs that book and use the ground, you end up with the issue of overuse or not enough football pitches to book for the football clubs in the area." He added, "What we also need to take into consideration is the pictures that we have and use for local people is a chance for them to join a local club for the physical exercise, but it also helps with mental health on many levels and helps parents meet other parents. I'm also going to say that with local grounds for local teams, it will help young children and teenagers pick up a football and not a knife, which if you take more activities away, it can only lead to boredom and antisocial behaviour. So, in a nutshell, if they take away Sandy Lane, they will need to put in place for all the local teams and other activities an other place to go. Help make Blackbird Lees Field a better place for the influx of extra teams and help East Oxford, which is losing their ground, build new football ground on the Barnes Road Rectory ground, which is a good green land at the back of Barnes Road shop. This will obviously open the gates for other clubs to use that ground. This comes after campaign group Save Our Green Space Community Group criticised the plans. An Oxford City Council spokesman said, "We are in discussion with Oxplace and Littlemore Parish Council to explore how we could work collaboratively on Sandy Lane Recreation Ground. The site is allocated for at least 120 homes and a possible Cowley Branch Line station in the local plan 2036. We aim to protect the provision of recreation facilities in the area while providing much needed homes and infrastructure."
A £40 million development has been completed at a science and technology park near Didcot. The Nebula development at Milton Park comprises 7 sustainable research and development workspaces, totalling nearly 80,000 square feet. The design and build of Nebula focused on environmentally conscious materials, incorporating glue-laminated structural timber beams in place of steel. With construction delivered by Barnwood Limited, Nebula's use of sustainably sourced and recyclable beams instead of steel has significantly reduced its carbon footprint. The approach has contributed to an upfront embodied carbon saving of 686 tonnes of CO2 throughout construction, the equivalent of 196 return flights to Hong Kong. Aimed at science, technology, or advanced engineering companies, Nebula's buildings have internal vaulted roof heights of 8 metres, providing flexibility for occupiers with requirements for large-scale scientific equipment or advanced engineering instruments. Following widespread interest from a variety of companies with research and development requirements, one of the research and development workspaces has been taken as a pre-let. The completion follows the announcement of a refreshed local development order at Milton Park. As the UK's first data-driven, green-focused planning agreement, the order is expected to support thousands of new jobs and permit 4.2 million square feet of development. In the coming years, it will streamline planning decisions for its occupiers to just 10 days. It also follows last month's government announcement about plans to boost infrastructure and attract new investment into the Oxford-Cambridge growth corridor. It's hoped this will attract up to £78 billion into the economy by 2035 and realise the area's potential as a global centre for science and innovation. Science Minister and Oxford-Cambridge Innovation Champion Lord Patrick Vallance said, "Modern high-tech facilities are essential to taking full advantage of rapidly developing science and technology and in fulfilling our ambitions for the Oxford-Cambridge corridor to be an economic engine for the whole of the UK. Nebula's new development of large-scale innovation space will support a range of growing industries, helping businesses to get off the ground and progress, and in turn, supporting this government's number one mission of economic growth." Philip Campbell, Commercial Director at Milton Park, added, "Nebula's completion follows on the heels of the government's Oxford to Cambridge announcement and plans to create a silicon corridor of growth. Following this significant milestone, we're looking forward to opening the doors and showing new and prospective occupiers around this flagship project for Milton Park. Nebula's occupiers will benefit from MEPC's $7 million infrastructure investment to enhance Milton Park's energy capacity, alongside electric charging provision for up to 32 vehicles. A new companionship cafe has been launched in Farringdon to tackle loneliness and isolation in older adults. The cafe is a dementia-friendly group, which will offer activities including sing-alongs and guest speakers. It's been launched by Home Instead Charities and will be supported by Dementia Oxfordshire. A spokesperson for Dementia Oxfordshire said, "We're thrilled to support this wonderful new group in Farringdon. Social connections are crucial for those living with dementia, as well as for their carers and families. This group will truly make a positive difference for local people. Anyone attending can chat informally with one of our friendly dementia advisors, who will be available at every session to provide practical advice and information." Ruth and Martin Spackman, members of the community, are looking forward to the cafe opening. They said, "Having lived in Farringdon for almost 50 years, we know lots of people by sight, but none of us know who else has a family member living with dementia. We're looking forward to supporting others over a coffee, as well as a good laugh and singing. Even if you arrive feeling low, you will leave feeling more positive." Penny Hamer, Executive Director of Home Instead Charities, added, "We're fortunate to be part of an organisation with over 255 locations where teams are deeply committed to supporting our charity's mission. Collaborating with the Swindon team to connect for the local community is incredibly rewarding. The feedback from our cafes has been overwhelmingly positive. They're vibrant spaces that bring joy to attendees." The Home Instead Charities Farringdon Friendship and Memories Cafe is supported by local home care company Home Instead Swindon and Vale of White Horse. The charity, which supports older people in their homes, said it understands the effects of isolation and how it can have both physical and mental health implications. A spokesperson for Home Instead said, "This is why the team was eager to partner with our charity to create a friendly, welcoming space where people can meet, reminisce, and enjoy a cuppa while receiving invaluable advice." Home Instead said it's committed to caring for its clients and sharing its knowledge of care within the community. The charity stands out for having a national charitable arm, which has already established a number of memory cafes in communities nationwide. The Farringdon Group will meet once a month at Farringdon United Church. The next dates are February 24th and March 24th, with ongoing events thereafter, held on the fourth Monday of each month, from 2:15 to 3:45 p.m.
Blenheim Palace will be serving heart-shaped pizzas and a themed afternoon tea this Valentine's Day. The Palace, near Woodstock, is offering romantic afternoon teas in its restored orangery from February the 14th to the 16th. For £60 per person, the menu includes a selection of finger sandwiches such as smoked salmon, dill and cream cheese, roasted red pepper with goat's cheese and grilled courgette, coronation chicken with mango chutney and truffle egg and Blenheim asparagus. There are also savoury options including duck bonbon with beetroot ketchup and crab and spring pea tartlet with brown crab mayonnaise and pickled apple. The sweet course features plain and fruit scones with strawberry preserve and clotted cream, layered lemon love cake, raspberry cracklin, white chocolate and strawberry cheesecake, and a salted caramel chocolate heart. A glass of pink fizz is also included. On February the 14th only, the Walled Garden Pizzeria will serve a package of two wood-fired heart-shaped pizzas with one side and a glass of pink fizz for £20. An à la carte lunch with Valentine's specials is also available in the Orangery, with two courses at £19 and three courses at £26. Visitors can buy gifts from Blenheim Palace shop or enjoy the surroundings, including the Temple of Diana, where Winston Churchill proposed to future wife Clementine Hozier, the formal gardens, Marlborough Maze, or a tour of the staterooms.
Blenheim Palace is marking 75 years since it opened to the public by making a series of donations. The palace near Woodstock, which first opened to the public in 1950, has announced a year-long Blenheim Branches Out legacy campaign. This will see it donate 75 estate-grown oak saplings to individuals, charities, schools and organisations. The saplings are not usually available for planting outside the 12,000-acre estate. Heather Carter, Managing Director of Visitor Attraction at Blenheim Palace, said, "We wanted to do something extra special for the 75th anniversary of the palace opening to the public, and this seemed like the perfect way of preserving the past while also protecting the future." Sustainability lies at the heart of everything we do here at Britain's Greatest Palace, and this is a unique opportunity for people to own a very special piece of our estate. Blenheim Palace is home to the greatest number of ancient oak trees in Europe, some dating back to around 1000 AD. The forestry team at Blenheim Palace has been collecting acorns since 2016 to ensure the preservation of these historic trees. Head forester Nick Bainbridge said, "We're extremely proud of our programme of propagating and protecting seedlings grown from acorns produced by the original oaks, which aims to ensure the legacy of these great survivors will live on for many years to come."
"It's a disaster waiting to happen," said a swimming instructor over proposals to scrap lifeguards at children's swimming lessons. The teacher in Oxford, who did not want to be named, said she is very concerned about children's safety if leisure operator Serco dispenses with lifeguards for afternoon lessons. "The company proposes to replace them with a drowning detection system using underwater cameras. Teachers will wear a watch that receives an alert when a child may be in distress or submerged. The technology would be installed at Barton, Blackbird Lees and Ferry Leisure Centres, which it runs on behalf of Oxford City Council." She said, "In recent meetings with swimming instructors, I asked where would the lifeguards be if they were not on the podiums watching the pool. I was told they will be in the area, but not necessarily immediately on poolside. I am not particularly confident that this setup would avoid a drowning, but I am absolutely certain there will be an injury." In 2014, Fusion Lifestyle, which previously ran leisure centres with Oxford City Council, also proposed removing lifeguards from some swimming lessons at four of Oxford's pools. "Teachers are instructing and monitoring around six or seven learners, but can have up to 11 children in the water at once, some as young as six. Lifeguards are an extra pair of eyes and hands should the need arise," she said. "My main concern is that the next time a teacher is interacting with one child, other children will, as they often do, jump or bomb into the water," she added. "It's also about behaviour as well. At present, the lifeguards blow their whistle and can stop bad behaviour immediately. And I also worry this also puts a far greater responsibility on teachers. It was the Oxford Mail that took it on. You published a story and there was an outcry. Parents said if there's no lifeguard, we are not sending our children. So they dropped it. At the moment, I'm not even sure the current parents even know about these proposals. They wouldn't dream of sending their children to swimming lessons without a lifeguard. It's a disaster waiting to happen." A spokesperson for Oxford City Council said the proposed assisted lifeguard technology system, which is backed by the Royal Life Saving Society, is still in the testing phase and has not yet been implemented at any of our pools. More Leisure has confirmed that no changes have been made to lifeguard provision at this stage and that lifeguards will continue to play a vital role in pool safety. Any future developments will of course be subject to rigorous safety checks and risk assessments.
An Oxford college has received a sizeable donation of works by one of the country's most famous authors. One of the world's largest privately held collections of letters, photographs, books, illustrations, and other materials by Lewis Carroll has been donated to Christchurch. Today, Lewis Carroll is best known for his Alice books, which have delighted generations of children the world over, as well as being adapted for Hollywood films. But the author's professional life was spent chiefly as an academic, a mathematician, and logician at Christ Church, University of Oxford. Excelling there as a student, he received the Christ Church Mathematical Lectureship in 1855, and remained at the college in various guises until his death in 1898. It is at Christ Church that he met Alice Liddell, daughter of the Dean of Christ Church, Henry Liddell, and the original inspiration for Alice in Wonderland, and it's there that he produced the hundreds of letters, photographs and sketches that now return home as part of the remarkable collection expertly curated by John Linseth. Since Christchurch was Mr. Carroll's home for most of his life, it's no surprise that its library, where the author even served as a sub-librarian for a time, has long been one of the foremost archives of his works. Included in the collection are more than 200 autograph letters from Carroll. It also contains a vast number of significant early editions of his works, including the Alice books, The Hunting of the Snark, and mathematical works including The Game of Logic and Symbolic Logic. Mr. Carroll is considered one of the best amateur photographers of his time. The Linseth collection contains over 100 Carroll photographs, including of his friends and noted figures of his day such as Alfred Lord Tennyson and Dante Gabriel Rossetti. The collection also contains proofs, drawings by Mr. Carroll and by his foremost illustrators John Tenniel and Harry Furness. Materials related to Mr. Carroll illustrate his work's contemporary and ongoing cultural impact, a very rich collection of reference works and an exceptional collection of Carroll books in translation from the very early translations through to more recent ones issued by Evertype Publishing, who specialise in Wonderland and Carolliana. The John A. Linseth Lewis Carroll collection is of tremendous scholarly value, and the library looks forward to making it accessible to current and future generations. Cataloguing and digitisation of the collection has just started, and they welcome inquiries at any time to library@chch.ox.ac.uk. An exhibition displaying some of the most exceptional items in the John A. Linseth Lewis Carroll collection started on the 4th of February in Christchurch Historic Upper Library.
There has always been plenty of rivalry on the field and plenty of friendship off it. Young footballers from Kidlington have been enjoying an annual tournament with the Dutch club for nearly 40 years. The exchange with Racing Club Leiderdorp, RCL, was set up in 1988 and has continued ever since, except for the COVID years. Last year, Kidlington took six teams on a four-day visit to the Netherlands to play RC1 and other Dutch clubs. The largest number to date, two under-13s and two under-15s, boys and girls, and under-17s and ladies teams. Kidlington under-13 girls and under-13 boys won their tournaments and the under-15 boys came second in theirs. RCL then hosted a closing ceremony where trophies were presented to the winning teams and gifts were exchanged between the two clubs. Earlier, Kidlington players, coaches and parents had enjoyed a day off from football to visit a theme park, water park, the Ajax Stadium and shopping centres. Beth Worth, an under-17 player, writes, "The idea of this friendly exchange arose from a desire to strengthen international ties through the universal language of football. With teams representing diverse regions and backgrounds, this exchange provides a platform for players and parents to engage in friendly competition while experiencing the rich culture of Holland. Through this exchange, both clubs aim to strengthen their bonds and create lasting memories. They enjoy the experience and great friendships are made. Fingers crossed that the latest exchange between the two clubs will take place in Kidlington this year. Members of Oxford's twinning link with the Dutch city of Leiden helped to set up the long-running football exchange."
Bicester has been earmarked as a possible location for a UK base for an F1 team. The Sauber team is looking to open a UK base as owner Audi gears up for its official entry into Formula One in 2026. The team has said the new technical centre would be in the so-called Motorsport Valley, so Audi can tap into the engineering talent there. A total of 7 of the 10 F1 teams are based in Motorsport Valley. These include Williams in Grove, Haas in Banbury, Mercedes in Brackley and Red Bull in Milton Keynes. Sauber is evaluating locations, which include Bicester, Silverstone and Milton Keynes, and hope to have the centre operational by the summer. Sauber Motorsport Chief Operating and Chief Technical Officer Mattia Binotto said, "We're excited to establish our technical centre in the UK to complement our key site in Hinwil, which will continue to lead our main engineering operations and experience the large team growth. Expanding into the UK allows us to remain close to one of the world's most dynamic motorsport ecosystems. Our vision is to create a strong collaborative network across Hinwil and the UK, driving innovation and performance." Sauber added, "This initiative is a key component of the Audi F1 project's long-term strategy to enhance and expand its technical capabilities." Sauber finished 2024 last in the Constructors' Championship, and Audi says it's aware of how much work is required before it can fulfil its ambition of competing at the front. A pet blood bank charity has thanked the lifesaver dogs that donated blood at an Oxfordshire vet's. Sian Anderson is the Southwest representative of Pet Blood Bank UK, a charity which works to provide blood to vets to help save lives. She said the 12 dogs who attended the recent donation session at Boundary Vets in Abingdon were a life-saving pack. Ms. Anderson, "We have a real mix of dogs that come along to our sessions at Boundary Vets, but we always have space for more amazing dogs to join our life-saving pack." The dogs in Abingdon donated a total of 8 units of blood, potentially saving up to 72 unwell pets' lives. The Pet Blood Bank operates constantly to provide blood when and where it is available, with the aim of advancing blood banking and transfusion medicine for pets. The charity is always welcoming new dog donors, and anyone with a pet who is aged between 1 and 8 years old, weighs 25 kilo and is healthy and happy can bring them along to get involved. Donation sessions are put on across the country where dogs can become lifesavers, and blood is then taken to a processing centre in Loughborough where it is processed. It is then stored and sent out to vets when called for to save dogs' lives. A famous barrister and wife of a Hollywood film actor has been appointed as a visiting professor of a university department in Oxford. Amal Clooney, who is married to George Clooney, has been made a visiting professor of practice at Blavatnik School of Government at the University of Oxford. Mrs. Clooney is an acclaimed barrister and human rights advocate. She said, "I'm honoured to be back at Oxford, this time not as a student, but as a professor. It's a privilege to have this opportunity to engage with the next generation of global leaders and to contribute to the vibrant academic community at Oxford. I look forward to collaborating with both the faculty and students to advance access to justice around the world." Enger Woods, Dean of the Blavatnik School of Government, added, "I'm delighted to welcome Amal Clooney to the school as a visiting professor of practice. As a preeminent practitioner and scholar, Amal's expertise and insights will greatly enhance the school's research and teaching." Mrs. Clooney joins the Blavatnik School following a career dedicated to pursuing justice for victims of human rights abuses around the world. She has won landmark cases on behalf of victims of genocide, sexual violence and persecution, and is the recipient of many awards for her record in securing the release of journalists imprisoned for their work. Mrs. Clooney is an Oxford graduate. She read law at St. Hugh's College and was awarded the Exhibition Scholarship and the Shrigley Award.
Nominations for new additions to a list of Oxford's heritage sites for 2025 have been announced, with author C.S. Lewis's former home on the list. The Oxford Heritage Asset List, managed by Oxford City Council, is a register of buildings, structures, features or places that make a special contribution to the character of the city and its neighbourhoods. The list, which currently includes 117 sites of significant historical, architectural, archaeological or artistic interest, is updated yearly. This year, 9 new hopefuls have been nominated either by the City Council itself, interested groups or members of the public. First on the list is a mural in Cowley, the Henry and Joyce Collins's Oxford mural in Templar Square, which was painted in 1976 and depicts Oxford's industrial history. A group of buildings in Headington Quarry, the Lewis Kilns, is also on the nomination list, built on the site of a former brickworks in 1922 and home to C.S. Lewis, author of the Chronicles of Narnia from 1930, until his death. One of two bathing places on up for the list is Long Bridges, located on a tributary of the River Thames, just north of Donington Bridge Road, a popular 19th century bathing spot. The other is Tumbling Bay Bathing Area, which is the oldest remaining public bathing place in the city, with its concrete banks and weir, and marks the site of the first place where women were allowed to publicly bathe in Oxford in 1892. An Oxford Brookes campus has also been nominated as a heritage asset, the Marston Road campus, which used to be Millam Ford School, Oxford City Council's first girls' secondary school in the city, founded in the 1890s. New Marston Meadows, the Riverside Meadows and Meads on the eastern side of the River Charwell, is a site of special scientific interest. A bid has been made to add the site and surrounding area to the list because of evidence of ridge and furrow cultivation from the Middle Ages on the land. The Parish Church of St Mary in Bayswater Road has been nominated for its historic and architectural interest, having built in 1958 in a monolithic form in a typical example of post-war design. Situated on the Oxford City Council and South Oxfordshire District boundaries, Slade Camp in Lyle Valley has been nominated because of its use as training grounds during the Second World War. Finally, St Andrew's Church of England Primary School in Headington is being considered as a heritage asset because of its late Victorian school building, built in 1894.
An opening date has been confirmed for a pub which is being refurbished and changing its name. The Morgan Pub Collective, which runs The Grapes in George Street, has taken over the Angel and Greyhound in St Clement's. The move surprised drinkers, as it was owned by Young's since 1991, but now it is run by Morgan, its old name, Oranges and Lemons, is being restored. Refurbishment work inside is well underway, and the pub is expected to reopen soon. Johnny Roberts, manager of The Grapes, who has been overseeing the refurbishment work, said, "There would be a soft opening for invited guests, with the pub reopening to drinkers on February the 12th. Staff are planning for 6 different real ales and 2 ciders. Young's sold the Angel and Greyhound to a property company, which then leased it to the Morgan Pub Collective. The pub was called the Oranges and Lemons from 1970 until the mid-1980s. It became a cocktail bar called Parker's in the 1980s, and then the Angel and Greyhound after the nearby meadow when Young's acquired it in 1991. Dick Morgan, who owns the Morgan Pub Collective, has pledged to give real ale drinkers plenty of choice at the Oranges and Lemons. He said earlier, "Real ale sales go up and down, and volumes have gone down over the last couple of years, and are still falling as there's a shift to keg products. But if real ale is what people want, we'll increase the range, as here at the Oranges and Lemons." Young's had spent a lot of money on this pub quite recently, but when it was put on the market, we thought we could bring something different to this site. Young's run pubs in exactly the same way wherever they are, with the same menus, whereas we will adapt it to the local markets. People ask why did Young sell this, but it must be because they couldn't make it pay. They were adding a 12.5% service charge to food in a big student area. The Grapes in George Street won Oxford Camera's City Pub of the Year award for 2025, narrowly beating the Royal Blenheim in St Ebbs. The company's 26 pubs are in locations as varied as Soho in central London and Chichester, West Sussex, and it also operates the Argyle in Henley. There is a particular concentration of its pubs in the southwestern suburbs of London and in Surrey, and it has just taken on a second pub in Twickenham, the George, leased from Green King to operate as a free house. Dave Richardson of the Oxford branch of Real Ale Group Camera has welcomed the Morgan Pub Company taking over the Angel and Greyhound. He said, "I'm confident Dick Morgan will do a great job at the Oranges and Lemons. We're hoping to have our awards night there on February the 17th. Mr. Morgan's company was running the Gardener's Arms in North Parade Avenue, but that pub has recently closed after the company decided to hand it back to Green King.
City residents and businesses have complained about the lack of free or affordable parking spaces after it was revealed how much the County Council made from fines last year. Oxfordshire County Council made over £1.8 million in parking fines in 2024, a Freedom of Information request revealed, but they say most of the money raised goes towards enforcement. Drivers parked on Mansfield Road in Oxford received the highest number of penalty charge notices, PCNs, by far, with roughly 14 tickets per day being issued on average in 2024. Parking in Oxford can cost as much as £19 for a maximum stay of 3 hours from Mondays to Saturdays between 8 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. Bernadette Gans, a spokesman for the Oxford Business Action Group, said the cost of on-street parking is sending out a message that Oxford is closed for business if you want to arrive by car. She added, "It's little wonder that customers risk getting a ticket in the hope that they can avoid the full parking charge. This is really disheartening for some independent business owners who rely on destination customers. Rural customers can take the park and ride and make an event of it, but the reality is that many will be deterred by this and choose to shop in a town or retail park where they feel welcome. She continued, "We're all time poor, and if you're just nipping to the shops or meeting a friend for coffee, the park and ride is not practical. The objective of the council is that shoppers don't arrive by car, but they need to hold their hands up and admit this has an impact on trade for many businesses. In the cost of living crisis, the council should be doing absolutely everything it can to help small businesses in our city, but our members tell us they feel let down." She added that the council should introduce short-term free or inexpensive parking in off-peak periods on weekdays to encourage shoppers to return to city centres. Jeremy Mogford, who owns a number of hotels and restaurants in the city, including the Old Parsonage, Quad and the Old Bank Hotel, said, "The sheer cost of parking is damaging businesses in the city. When I came to Oxford and opened a business here, it had a real vibrancy to it. The daytime and nighttime economies were really buoyant. In those days, parking was free in the evenings and a reasonable cost in the day." He added that Oxford should follow suit with other cities like Bath, which has a more affordable parking fees. Councillor Andrew Gant, Cabinet Member for Transport for the County Council, said, "This is not a way to make money out of motorists, but to ensure our roads are safer and kept clear of obstacles to keep the traffic moving. Offences such as double parking, parking in disabled bays without a blue badge and on yellow lines can put other road users in dangers. The top 10 streets in the county which received the most parking tickets included St Giles, Cheyne Lane, Parks Road, Walton Street in Jericho, Hockmore Street in Cowley, Divinity Road, Merton Street, Market Square in Bicester, and Oxford High Street. The County Council hounded out a total of 63,147 penalty charge notices in 2024.
A warning has been issued for homeowners in an Oxfordshire town where offenders are impersonating gas company employees. Thames Valley Police put out an alert for people in Whitney after reports of suspicious activity in the area. The force said several men are pretending to be from British Gas and going door to door asking to enter the properties. It reported that the men have no ID and are driving around in a plain white van wearing high-vis that say gas and fire. Police Community Support Officer for Cherwell and West, Hayley Keeping, said, "If you see these people and they come to your door, politely decline their services and do not allow them to enter your property. If possible, get a good description and vehicle registration and call 101. The officer also recommended that anyone approached by someone claiming to be a company employee sees valid ID and calls the company to confirm they're aware of the visit.
Are the public information films of the past etched on your brain? That's what they were meant to do, suggests Emma Brennan, an award-winning journalist and former news editor with a fondness for yesteryear. This is what she wrote recently, titling her article, "The Good, the Mad and the Scary Side of Health and Safety." I've lost count of the times I've told people that health and safety wasn't invented in my day, but recent talk of the services of lollipop people being cut due to budget constraints made me rethink this statement. In the 1970s, we did have health and safety, but it came to us via public service announcements commissioned by the government that was shown on TV during advert breaks. These mini productions told us in no uncertain terms what would happen to us if we messed with a box of matches, talked to strangers, or swam in murky ponds. The difference then was that we were expected to learn from the graphic examples shown in the films and employ a bit of common sense. The most prominent campaign of the 1970s was the Green Cross Code, which urged children to think, stop, look, and listen before crossing the road. The advert started with a couple of children rushing to cross a busy road without paying attention. Green Cross Man, famously played by Star Wars actor David Prowse and his robotic friend, come to the rescue, pointing out a safe place to cross. It ends with the words, "We won't be there when you cross the road, so always use the Green Cross Code." These days, it seems we were not allowed to point out the completely obvious to youngsters in case it upsets them. But in my day, they spared us nothing. A prime example is the public information film voiced by horror actor Donald Pleasance entitled Lonely Water. It began with a shot of mist-shrouded boggy body of water with the Grim Reaper standing menacingly in the background. Mr. Pleasance, in his most unnerving accents, announced, "I am the spirit of dark and lonely water, ready to trap the unwary, the show-off, the fool." It then shows a series of children having various water-related accidents. An image that will haunt me forever is that a pile of clothes placed ominously next to a sign reading, "Danger, no swimming," old cards, weeds and bedsteads lurked beneath the surface of every pond, according to Mr. Pleasance. "It's a perfect place for an accident," he warned, adding that he had no power over sensible children. That put the onus squarely on us kids to have our wits about us at all times. Admittedly, it gave me horrendous nightmares about disappearing into a dark, junk-filled pond. But it did the trick, and I never went near any water without recalling the possibility of the Grim Reaper waiting for me to slip up or in. Less fearsome were the Charlie Says public service films from 1973, featuring a cartoon boy and a cat named Charlie, who spoke in a bizarre meow-like language interpreted by his young owner. One film warned children of stranger danger, with the cat essentially stopping his owner from going with a stranger to see some puppies. Another looked at fire hazards with the warning, "Charlie says, if you ever see a box of matches lying around, tell Mummy, because they can hurt you." For a six-year-old, it was a bit more cryptic than the Donald Pleasance production, and I wondered if the matches might spring to life and attack me. Public information films were not a new concept in the 70s, though. The British government had been making them during the Second World War and beyond. They weren't anywhere near as grim as those from my youth and were informative rather than scaremongering. In fact, my great-grandfather, a wheelwright by trade, featured in a 1943 film about architecture, farming and crafts. Other seemingly random subjects included how a bicycle is made and the manufacture of steel. Most of us are also familiar with the poster health and safety campaigns of the war years, including Warner's "To Sailors That Loose Talk Can Cost Lives." Most famously, the advice to keep calm and carry on in the face of adversity, which is wholly relevant today.
Views are being sought on a new destination park, which is being planned for recreation and activities in Bicester. Bicester Town Council is asking the public to share feedback for the play area proposed to be built in Garth Park. This comes after it was announced last month that in 2025-26, residents will see new play parks across Bicester, including more than £400,000 on this development. The idea is to transform Garth Park into a destination park, and was put forward by Conservative councillor Donna Ford in 2023. The survey asks a series of multiple choice questions, including about accessibility, the impact it will have on the community, and the target groups. A statement issued by the authority said, "Here at the council, we're asking for your help to make the final decisions. If you have a spare moment, please could you take our quick survey regarding the park? We thank you for getting involved and helping revamp Garth Park. Keep an eye out for announcements, post soon with all the details. There are plenty more exciting things to come in 2025, so watch out." Last February, a survey was launched for feedback on four design options for the play area at Garth Park, with the final design being the destination park. A town council statement at the time said, "We want to create a park to serve multiple purposes and accommodate a wide range of activities and events and provide a space for recreation, relaxation, socialisation and cultural programming to appeal to the diverse interests of the Bicester community."
A method of identifying falsified vaccines without opening the vaccine vial has been developed by researchers at the University of Oxford. The approach analyses the vaccine vial label and its adhesive, allowing the vials to remain in the supply chain. The study also demonstrated the technique can distinguish genuine COVID-19 vaccine liquid from falsified vaccine surrogates. The World Health Organization, WHO, estimates 10.5% of medicines worldwide in low and middle income countries are substandard or falsified. This poses a threat to global health as these medicines and vaccines fail to prevent or treat diseases and may cause additional adverse health consequences if harmful ingredients are used. Study co-leader Professor James McCullough from Oxford University's Department of Chemistry said, "With an increasing global reliance on vaccines to maintain population health and the rise in standard and falsified vaccines, this method is both timely and addresses an important global need. Although the vast majority of COVID-19 vaccines were genuine, falsified vaccines, including the Covishield vaccine, were found in Uganda, India, and Myanmar. In these cases, the label on the vaccine vial had also been falsified. The Vaccine Identity Evaluation, VIE, collaboration is working on developing novel tests for detecting falsified vaccines in supply chains. In the new study, the VIE team used devices called MALDI-2OF mass spectrometers, which are widely available across the globe and used in hospitals for identifying bacteria. They tested the Covishield vaccine produced by the Serum Institute of India and showed for the first time analysis of spectra from the vaccine vial label and its adhesive could be used to detect falsified vaccines. The vaccine liquid could also be easily differentiated from a range of solutions commonly used in falsified vaccines, such as amikacin. VIE team leader Professor Paul Newton from Oxford University's Centre for Tropical Medicine and Global Health said, "This innovative approach gives a relatively simple and accessible method for the local screening of vaccine labels and liquids for authenticity and detecting falsified vaccines when fake labels have been used." Study co-leader Dr. Bevin Gangadadaran from the University's Department of Biochemistry and Kavli Institute for Nanoscience Discovery added, For the vaccine liquid, even if criminals made up falsified vaccines using the same ingredients at the same concentration, they could still be identified due to the characteristic spectral profile of an excipient which acts as an internal marker for authenticity.
Van Morrison will perform in Oxford this March after announcing 4 gigs across the country. The legendary singer-songwriter is known for hits including Brown Eyed Girl, Moondance and Into the Mystic. The Northern Irishman, whose music provides a distinctive blend of folk, blues and R&B, will play at the Oxford New Theatre on March the 23rd. The other concerts will take place in Nottingham, Birmingham and Stroud. Tickets for the Oxford show will be priced at £80, £65 and £50 and will go on sale on February the 7th. He'll be performing in Nottingham on March the 18th, Birmingham on March the 19th and Stroud on March the 24th. The start time for the shows is 8 p.m. with the exception of Nottingham, which will be 7:30.
A memorial service has been held at RAF Brize Norton to mark 20 years since the plane was shot down over Iraq, killing all 10 men on board. The Hercules XV-179 call sign Hilton 22 was on a routine mission from Baghdad to Balad on January the 30th, 2005, when it was hit by enemy fire. The aircraft, XV-179, was operated by No. 47 Squadron, which was based at RAF Lynham in Wiltshire. The memorial service took place outside the squadron's old headquarters at Brize Norton, where a plaque is dedicated to the aircraft and crew. RAF personnel, colleagues and friends gathered for the service, conducted by the base's senior chaplain, the Reverend Wing Commander Colin Weir. Commander Air Wing Group Captain Andy McIntyre said, "Holding the service outside Old 47 Squadron is a fitting location, as we laid wreaths on the same memorial garden which was put in place here 10 years ago. I've been reflecting on how much time has passed and how at the time when I was a young co-pilot myself, the incident was felt across the whole force. Everyone coming together today reminds me how the Air Mobility Force has been shaped by this incident over the last 20 years. All this time, my thoughts go out to all the family members of those who were involved in this significant tragedy 20 years ago. Wreaths were laid from the Royal Air Force, Australian Air Force, RAF Brize Norton and No. 47 Squadron."
Blur's Alex James will headline his annual festival alongside the Wombats, Faithless and other big names. The lineup for the big festival, which takes place annually at Mr. James's Kingham Farm over the August bank holiday weekend, was announced on February the 5th. Nelly Furtado and Travis will also be headlining the 14th event, which brings together music from the UK's biggest artists, Michelin-starred chefs and award-winning street food. This year, renowned chef and owner of Le Manoir aux Quatre Saisons in Oxfordshire, Raymond Blanc, will make an appearance. A statement from the organisers said, "All the classics brought to life by Alex James's house band, full symphony orchestra and some very special guest performances and cameos. Blur, Oasis, Pulp and Supergrass and a host of evergreen festival anthems elevated to soaring new heights." Sophie Ellis-Bextor, Tom Walker and Rizzle Kicks will also perform at the event, taking place from August the 22nd to the 24th. Mr. James, who will perform on the Sunday, said, "I'm absolutely thrilled to be welcoming everyone back to the farm for our 14th year of Big Festival. We've pulled out all the stops to create a weekend packed with incredible music, top-notch food and something for the whole family to enjoy. From Nelly Furtado and Faithless Live to my star-studded Britpop classical, where Blur, Oasis, Pulp, Supergrass and the entire host of Britpop big hitters get the full orchestra treatment. It will be a unique and fitting way to close Big Festival 2025, which lands almost exactly 30 years since Roll With It and Country House went head-to-head. I can't wait to see everyone here in the beautiful Cotswolds for what promises to be our best summer celebration yet.
Jeremy Clarkson is set to launch a new skincare line of products at his Oxfordshire farm. The former host of Top Gear and the Grand Tour sells a variety of goods at his Diddley Squat Farm shop located in Chadlington near Chipping Norton. These include pork pies, condiments, candles, soap, honey and crates of his alcohol brand Hawkstone, to name but a few. The latest of these is expected to be a new skincare range which would have the trademark Snail Juice, similarly named to Mr. Clarkson's Bee Juice Honey range. Curdle Hill Farm Limited, owned by the TV celebrity, has applied to the UK government's Intellectual Property Office to trademark the term, according to the Daily Mail. The papers were filed last month, and the newspaper claims that these are now under examination by lawyers, which, if granted, would allow Mr. Clarkson to have the trademark for a decade. This comes after the 62-year-old star launched Diddley Squat Wet, a unisex fragrance, for £38 as part of his Grubby Farmer toiletries and fragrance line. Mr. Clarkson is expected to return to UK screens soon with the upcoming release of Season 4 of Clarkson's Farm. Prime Video's popular documentary about the day-to-day life on Chadlington's Diddley Squat Farm has also been commissioned for the fifth season, confirmed by the former Top Gear host last year.
Summertown Wine Bar is teaming up with Broomish, the company behind the Back Lane Tavern in Woodstock, to open Ox 2 at 267 Banbury Road at the end of the month. Managing Director of Broomish, Chris Brewster, said, "We're thrilled to be opening our new site. We're building a new commercial kitchen, complete with a Rabata barbecue, and doing a fairly substantial refurbishment to the main trading space. Our food offering will be similar to that which we currently do at the Back Lane Tavern. Two rosette standard small plates and tapas-style dining, with the addition of our cooked-over-fire section on the menu. We're very keen to maintain the wine bar status, alongside the new restaurant offering." Mr. Brewster, a former account manager at Majestic Wine, reopened the King's Head in Woodstock in June 2021, following a £350,000 refurbishment. The pub on Park Lane was renamed the Back Lane Tavern, its historic name which many locals already used. He also runs the Duke of Marlborough, now the Duke, outside Woodstock. Summertown Wine Bar was opened by Graham Woodward and Michael Jelly, who met while working at Majestic Wines, and Emily Robotham in March 2023. Mr. Woodward and Mr. Jelly opened independent local wine merchant Grape Mines on South Parade in 2018, which was crowned Oxford Business Awards Retailer of the Year 2022. The wine bar has more than 30 wines available by the glass, over 300 wines by the bottle, plus beers, coffees, cocktails, and currently a small food offering to complement the drinks. A garden furniture retailer is leaving its office in Abingdon after 2.5 years to move to premises 5 times the size. Pergolux UK is relocating to a new 45,000 square foot office in Chalgrove. The space will be used to keep stock on site and will feature a new showroom to display the company's pergolas. The move comes as the company completes its third full year in the UK market, with plans to expand its current team of 9 full-time employees to a team of 15 by the end of 2025. Sam Stevens, country manager for Pergolux UK, said, "The Pergolux team is incredibly ambitious. We want to become the number one pergola brand in the UK and globally, and moving to a larger location will allow us to continue to grow over the coming years. We've outgrown our current office space, and moving will give us the opportunity to showcase all of our amazing pergolas, including our glass and wall mount units, which we were unable to do previously due to lack of space. Pergolux operates in 14 countries across the world and specialises in customisable aluminium pergolas. Mr. Stevens added, "As well as our big move, we've got some other really exciting plans this year. There's loads in the pipeline, and moving to our new office space is definitely a great way to kickstart this year."
And that was the last item for this week. Please note there is now a new telephone number for you to ring if you have any comments about this week's Ox Talk edition. Please ring 07496 062 280 and leave your name and contact details, as well as your message. Alternatively, you can email mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and previous editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen or download. Thank you very much for listening.